All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the May edition of our Health Information Technology Advisory Committee. Want to welcome everyone and hope you all are well and safe. And thank you again for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be with us today. Quick roll call, and then we'll get started. Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Robert Waugh.
Morning, present.
Michael Adcock. Okay, maybe not yet. Christina Carballo.
Good morning.
Tina Esposito.
Morning.
Cynthia Fisher.
Good morning.
Valerie Gray.
Good morning.
Anil Jain.
Good morning.
Jim Georges. That's it. John Kansky.
I'm here.
Ken Kawamoto.
Good morning.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Erin Malik.
Good morning.
Clem McDonald. Erin Meary.
Good morning.
Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
Terry O'Malley.
Good morning.
Tim Santelis.
Good morning.
Raj Watwani.
Good morning.
Steve Reedy. Abby Sears.
Good morning.
Alexis Snyder.
Hello.
Sasha Termont.
Good morning.
Andy Tresat.
Present. Good morning.
Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
And Denise Webb.
Good morning.
I know Michelle Schreiber could not be with us from CMS. Do we have Alex Smuggy on the line? Okay. James Elsey. Ram Sriram and Adi Vendelapi both could not be with us today. Jonathan Nebaker. And Amy Abernathy. Or Nina Hunter from FDA. Okay. Also with us from ONC, we have Dr. Rucker, Steve Posnack, Elise Sweeney-Anthony, and Avinash Shambhag. With that, I will turn it over to our national coordinator, Dr. Rucker, for opening remarks.
Hey, Lauren, thanks. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining. Obviously, I think all of our lives in a variety of ways have been affected with the coronavirus and the work there, and do want to give a shout out to all the folks who are exposing themselves on the front lines, taking care of patients and frankly of the public through all the supply chain work. We've been very active in a number of discussions looking at the information flows in cures, what can be done there, COVID, what can be done there, and, what can be augmented. Some of the health information exchanges have some, generate some particular opportunities. As folks probably heard, we are using our enforcement discretion on timelines for the Cures Act final rule, which essentially has the effect of delaying the certification parts of the program by 3 months on top of the month and a half that we used to get the delay out from when the rule was electronically given to the public, so roughly 4.5 months. And so that's out there. There are some complementary things with CMS as well, and some of the information blocking stuff I think Elise can talk about a little bit later if she wishes. We have updated COVID information on our healthit.gov website, some of the data standards there, and we I think had some good follow-ups from the our COVID hearing last month, and which I found personally to be very informative, and have had a number of meetings, so many that Now it becomes unclear how many of them were started by that meeting, but quite a few. We have gotten the public comments on our federal health IT strategic plan, the 2020 to 2025. For folks who haven't had a chance to look at that, there are a number of things, not just about health in general, but about public health as well. In that, finally, before turning it over, I'd like to just thank everybody for their hard work over the last 2 years. Lauren and team have put together an infographic that she can tell you about, just if you want to look at your work. So with that, let me turn it over back to, I believe, Carolyn and Robert. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Recker. Good morning, everyone. It's great to see everyone back in the group. I know it's been kind of a crazy time with people dispersed, doing things you maybe are not used to doing, certainly working in different ways. And it's good to see us all healthy and coming together again this month. And I will now hand the mic to Robert to review the agenda and approve the minutes.
Well, thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, Dr. Recker. Good morning, everyone. Great to be with you all again. We're getting ourselves back on schedule with our high-tech agenda after having a couple of meetings focused on COVID. I hope all of you found that those prior meetings on COVID were useful. They've certainly provoked a lot of activity and interest, and we hope that we're able to continue to leverage health information technology to help in this important time with the COVID pandemic. This morning we have two major presentations. One is on the National Health IT Priorities for Research, and the second is an update from our Intersection of Clinical and Administrative Data Task Force that has been meeting for over a month. So that's our plan for today. It's a little lighter agenda than some meetings in the past, but we thought these are important two things for us to update on, and we look forward to your review and comments on those two important topics. As always, we have a public comment period scheduled at 11:15, so we'll try to adhere to that schedule so the public knows when they can come in to comment. We've had a couple of people sign in on the public comment side. We noted your attendance, and we'll continue to do so as people join the call. And finally, we need to go ahead and approve our April 15th, 2020 meeting minutes. Those were sent out prior to this meeting. First of all, are there any comments, suggestions, changes, amendments to those minutes? Hearing none, then we'll go ahead and approve those minutes. All those in favor of approval of the April 15th, 2020 meeting minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Any abstentions? All right, they are approved. So with that, we also made some time in the schedule for Elise Anthony to go ahead and give us some updates on ONC policy. So with that, Elise, if you can take us into that, appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hi, Robert, and good morning, everyone. Thank you again for joining us today. I did want to echo the thanks that Don provided earlier in terms of, you know, all of the support that you have done, not just this year in terms of helping us look at things such as COVID-19 response, but also since the inception of HITECH. And, you know, as mentioned, there is a quick look of all the work that HITECH has done, and it's available on our website. It gives you a great look at the number of task force meetings. It's just a phenomenal amount of work. The hearing on prior authorization, more than 20 HITECH meetings of the full HITECH, 155 task force and work group meetings. And in terms of the recommendations that have been provided from everything from the rule to the trust exchange framework to the U.S. core data for interoperability, just a number of different activities that has really helped us at ONC to perform our work in the best capacity, and having that background from on the ground work that you're doing from the patient perspective, from the developer perspective, et cetera, has been extremely helpful. So many thanks in that regard. Just want to make sure you guys can hear me okay. Assuming they can't. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Okay, good. All right. I was seeing that you guys couldn't hear me. I wanted to make sure. All right, so the first thing I wanted to talk about was some of the resources that we have released and made available on our website. In regards to COVID-19 in particular, we have a page that lists tools and resources that are maybe helpful to the health IT as well as to the clinical community. We've also updated the interoperability standards resource that we have online that to list out COVID-19 standards that are being used in the space. So I encourage folks to check out that as well. As well as the IPG, the Interoperability Proving Ground, is also updated to reflect and to provide an opportunity for folks to put in their projects related to COVID-19 and interoperability. So take a look at the Interoperability Proving Ground, but also the ISA, the Interoperability Standards Advisory. And then all of that is accessible on that COVID-19 response page. In terms of questions, we've been getting a lot of questions, great questions regarding implementation of the rule that revolve around the rule itself, but also some questions that relate to other areas of our work streams, including, for example, public health, health IT safety, certification programs, the chapel, and we've updated the portal on our website for those inquiries. So not only is it available for inquiries, but it's also available for feedback. If you take a look at that page, you'll see that you are able to provide us questions or feedback on any part of the work streams there, as well as any others that you can think of as well. One thing to note is you can submit questions or feedback anonymously. However, if you do submit, questions, we won't have a way to get back to you directly unless you submit the information for contact. But you can submit questions anonymously. On that page, you'll also find in particular, a way for you to report any information blocking complaints that folks may have, as well as to submit questions, again, on the final rule. We want to make sure that questions are coming in through that form because it allows us to see where there might be commonality between the questions submitted, and it will help us think through opportunities for us to provide, for example, frequently asked questions, responses on our website in the future. So I encourage folks to take a look at that. I think it's a helpful resource for us as well as for stakeholders to communicate and provide us with some feedback. We also have some updated blogs on our website. And this is a great opportunity. You can hear from our subject matter experts that are doing a lot of the work related to things such as research, and you'll hear Teresa talk a little bit later on some of the research aspects, but there's areas regarding research and precision medicine, some of the rule provisions. There's a blog by Rob Anthony that talks about the certification side and the conditions and how that is set up within the certification program. I encourage folks to check that out, as well as a recent one that we've released around strategic planning and how our strategic planning works with and incorporates the research agenda at ONC. And then the last one is an additional plug, which I always make, my regular public service announcement related to the rule resources. On our website, we have a number of resources that can be helpful as you are looking through and reading through the rule. Everything from webinars to fact sheets are available. And on the webinars, we also have the actual audio as well as the PowerPoint themselves. So thank you so much for all that you have done in that respect. I want to bounce back to COVID a bit there, because one of the things that I neglected to say is I wanted to just express appreciation for all of the feedback and the comments we had during the COVID hearing, as well as for all of the folks who participated in the hearing itself. Having all of those perspectives has been very helpful to us, and we're very grateful there. In terms of next steps, what we're doing now is we are working with our federal partners to determine where a potential charge could exist that's based upon what we heard in the HITECH hearing and from the HITECH members. In particular, we're working with CDC to explore specific ideas for future HITECH activity, so more to come shortly on that as well. We will keep a HITECH updated as next steps continue. Next slide. So on enforcement discretion, Don summed this up pretty well, but I did just want to highlight, here is the link to a quick kind of one-pager that lays out what exactly within the certification program side of the rule would have the enforcement discretion attached to it. Again, as a reminder, the enforcement discretion relates to the certification side. So that's the provisions in 45 CFR Part 170. It does not relate to the information blocking side. But if you want to get a quick look at all of the provisions and what enforcement discretion would look like as per the statement, then you can see it on this resource. So feel free to, if you follow that link, it will be there. You can also find it by just going to healthit.gov/cures rule, and it will take you there as well. Next slide. Okay, webinars. So upcoming webinars, this is just a plug. I encourage people to check out the webinars. We've been hearing some great feedback that they've been helpful. In addition, the questions that have been submitted, we've been able to answer the ones that we could in the time frame on the call. And then we also have those questions, and the team and I go through those questions, and we think about, you know, again, are there any commonality in the questions? Are there areas where a frequently asked question might be helpful to stakeholders as well? The two upcoming webinars are compliance timeline. So that would be a good one to check in if you're interested in the enforcement discretion that I just talked about, as well as we will have one as it relates to the pediatric care and setting provisions that are included in the rule, and that one will be on June 3rd. So please do check those out. If you are unable, no worries. They will be available online as the audio will be available, as well as the slides themselves. The previous webinars that we've had, you can see the list there, and again, you can check those out online. Next slide. Okay, this is the my last slide. I wanted to just highlight this. I think this came up several times in the hearing, as well as in some of the feedback that HITECH provided regarding HIPAA and the updates that are included on OCR's website regarding HIPAA, privacy and security, and COVID-19. On April 24th, OCR hosted a webinar. Tim Noonan and Marissa Gordon Nugent hosted a webinar that focused specifically on some of the provisions that might be of interest to health IT stakeholders. It is also available. You can access it via OCR, but you can also access it on our website on that COVID-19 resource page that I mentioned earlier. It was a really great webinar and provided, I think, a lot of clarity and helpful information for folks who wanted to understand what the provisions or what the statements and updates have been from OCR. So hopefully that's helpful to stakeholders and helpful to the HITECH as well. And I think that's all I have for right now. Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks, Elise, for all those updates and particularly for the information about where to find things on the healthitgov.com website. Just a clarification, we will be doing the public comment period at 11:45. And with that, we will move to the first presentation. That is a presentation on the National Health IT Priorities for Research from Teresa Sayas-Caban and Kevin Cheney. I'll pass the mic now. Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. As Lauren said, my name is Teresa Sayas-Caban. I am Chief Scientist for the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology. I'm joined by my colleague, Kevin Cheney, who is the Senior Program Manager with the Chief Scientist Division, and we'll be discussing the policy and development agenda. But before we do, I wanted to provide a bit of background on the Chief Scientist Division and some recent updates. Next slide, please. We see our work in our division as sitting at the intersection of research and care delivery. ONC traditionally doesn't fund research per se, but we see our role as leveraging the health IT infrastructure and the investment this country has made in health IT to support the biomedical and health services research enterprise. We direct projects that help advance the research agenda and have a robust portfolio of projects under the Precision Medicine Initiative, patient-centered outcomes research. We've been collaborating with the Office of Technology when the leading edge acceleration projects in health IT funding opportunity recently launched an effort focused on workflow automation policy development through the use of health IT. We've been leading studies in artificial intelligence and continue to be engaged in conversation with regards to use of machine learning and AI in health and healthcare, and broadly focused on accelerating innovation in health IT. Aside from projects, we also coordinate with key biomedical and health services research supporters, such as colleagues at the National Institutes of Health, the Food and Drug Administration, the Centers for Disease Control, and Prevention, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation, and others outside of the department as well. As you all know, the 21st Century Cures Act prioritized interoperability, which will be critical for research. So the policies and regulations and technology development that ONC is advancing broadly have great applicability and are critical to be able to advance discovery. The Cures Act and the implementation will be a catalyst for innovation, both by making available data that can be presented in novel ways to providers and patients and caregivers alike, and also supporting novel care delivery models, as well as enable scientific discovery with regard to diagnosis and treatments and new ways of delivering care. Next slide, please. And I wanted to highlight a couple of recent activities. In particular, as you may be aware, ONC released its most recent special emphasis notice under our LEAP and Health IT funding opportunity. This funding opportunity was published initially in 2018 and with the goal of addressing well-documented and emerging challenges, inhibiting the development, use, or advancement of interoperable health IT at scale across the healthcare system. The most recent special emphasis notice has three areas of interest, and our division is leading one focused on cutting-edge health IT tools for scaling health research. And this actually builds on one of the recommendations and the priorities in the agenda we're discussing this morning. As you may be aware from my previous presentation to the HITECH, ONC has been involved with the Precision Medicine Initiative that was launched a few years ago since prior to its launch. As Elise noted, we've recently been providing updates regarding this work through a blog post series, with the final one due to be published next week. We recently released a final report from the second phase of the Sync for Genes project, which has been focused on getting genomic information in standardized ways and to the point of care and for research, along with a companion publication in the Applied Clinical Informatics Journal. As I mentioned earlier, we also have a robust portfolio of patient-centered outcomes research projects. We released a final report from one of them, which was developed in collaboration with AHRQ, and it's focused on sharing patient-reported outcomes through health IT. We also redid the webpage, so I encourage you to take a look with updated descriptions of the projects and outputs from each. Please be on the lookout for additional reports on two of the projects that have concluded, focused on a coordinated registry network for women's health technology and privacy and security later this spring and into the summer. Next slide, please. What our work and this portfolio of projects and our collaborations with other federal agencies as well as private sector stakeholders have demonstrated is how instrumental health IT is to the research enterprise, making usable electronic health information and as many other data types as possible readily available and easily transferable for patients, providers, and researchers is fundamental for some of the critical activities that are undertaken in research and discovery, including successfully assembling research cohorts, effectively analyzing collecting data, and recent interest across different research programs, returning results to participants. Next slide, please. In particular, the increased availability of electronic health data and the investment in the health IT infrastructure have created an unprecedented opportunity for biomedical, clinical health services, and public health research. However, challenges remain with regard to data quality, access, and management. And unfortunately, this sometimes results in research being inhibited and advances in discovery potentially being delayed. We saw an opportunity to examine those gaps and challenges more closely and develop key priorities and related actions to enable effective and efficient use of those data, as well as the existing health IT infrastructure to advance research and discovery. We're very fortunate to do so collaboratively with stakeholders along the way, and are very happy to discuss the result with you in a little bit more depth today. I'll now turn to my colleague, Kevin Chaney, to discuss the resulting agenda.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Teresa. So today I have the pleasure to walk you through our National Health IT Priorities for Research, a Policy and Development Agenda, which articulates a vision of a health information ecosystem supporting research and advancing scientific discovery. Next slide.
I think what I would do.
So how did we go about doing this? It obviously required a lot of input. So first we started with an extensive background report to better understand the federal and non-federal activities to advance the national health IT infrastructure in support of biomedical and health services research, as well as what were the large research initiatives underway or anticipated that will be driving our national health IT infrastructure requirements. We also held discussions with key informants, so those who are, you know, experts on EHR interoperability and usability, as well as the health IT architecture requirements needed to support research. And this helped us identify six key gap areas in the health IT infrastructure to support research, and I'll go over those in just a little bit. We took these gap areas, and they provided the framing for an in-person workshop, which is where we had about 30 federal and private industry stakeholders. And we asked them to kind of further explore those gap areas, as well as kind of thinking about what stakeholders and activities would be necessary to improve scientific discovery and application. And we then took these discussions, distilled them further into seven cross-cutting challenges that we saw across the initial six gap areas that needed further validation. And then ultimately, we took those through some additional validation. We spoke with some of our key informants again, and this led us to a series of priority areas. And we took these initial priority areas and we presented them to the American Medical Informatics Association conference, two different panels. And then based on attendee feedback, we kind of reached back out to initial key informants and we distilled them even further into what became our final nine priority areas. But before we get there, I did want to take a quick look at the gaps and the challenges that we had identified through this process. Next slide, please. So taken together, the background report and our key informant interviews pointed to the following six gap areas in the health IT infrastructure that needed to be addressed. The first was the adaptability of the health IT infrastructure. So when we think about health IT, you know, it can be incrementally adapted to address new scientific discoveries. We think about operational and workflow needs that incrementally get, you know, adapted, or thinking of the evolving business and clinical priorities, or even organizational shifts, and the things that we do to update some of our health IT. Less so is this done, though, when we think about research. The second gap was the ability to produce high-quality data for research. So systems do not consistently perform data collection in ways that would better support research, consistently identify the data captured, its timing, the level of granularity that's needed, how it was captured, and the context during collection. The third gap area, so health IT functionality needed for research, looks at the growing need for health IT to support functions that easily incorporate research evidence into practice through decision support triggers and rules, whether that's thinking of application programming interfaces or APIs with third-party functions, and IT-driven challenges in the workflow. The next gap area, so data aggregation across multiple platforms, is obviously, I'm sure everyone here on the call is of no surprise. This has been a constant challenge for us, both in the clinical space as well as in the research ecosystem. The fifth challenge was the advancement of patient engagement in research, which again, we need to have a diverse patient engagement strategy to be able to reach those who are typically underrepresented in research and figure out better ways to engage as well as keep them engaged as a part of research. And then the sixth and final is realizing a transparent and scalable architecture. So the vision of a research, you know, informing practice and then practice generating data back again for research means that developers need to deploy tools on a large scale that request and manage data, but also we must utilize a systems architecture that simplifies the process of obtaining data for research and for incorporating research findings into practice. So those were the six gap areas, and then we took those gap areas and we presented them at our in-person workshop. Next slide. And we discussed those over the course of 2 days, and what came out of that was a series of seven challenges that were cross-cutting across those gap areas, and this really started to create the foundation of what would become our priority areas. So the first one was the transparent and interoperable health-related data. The second was tools that allow use, interaction with, and sharing of standardized EHR data. The third, solutions to enable aggregation across multiple non-EHR-based data sources. The fourth, functional solutions for patient matching and identity management. The fifth, consent management necessary for data sharing and research. The sixth, research opportunity for those traditionally been underserved or underutilized in research participation. And then the seventh is opportunities to encourage dialogue and education on the use of health IT infrastructure for research.
And pardon me, Kevin, if we could ask everyone to please mute your lines. Thank you.
Next slide. So taken together, we now have the background report, our key informant interviews, and the workshop. And it informed a vision for a health IT infrastructure that supports alignment of the clinical and research ecosystems where research happens faster, better, and easier, and new knowledge is available at the point of care to improve outcomes. Researchers would be able to easily access high-quality data in standardized formats with the necessary metadata to understand where, why, how, and by whom data were collected. The health IT infrastructure would also support widespread access to the tools and services needed for more effective and efficient research, including the ability to match data across multiple sources and aggregate those data for faster analysis. The health IT infrastructure enabled tools would facilitate patient-centered communications and mechanisms to recruit participants across a wide spectrum of organizations and settings, improving interest and engagement. Next slide. So what does the agenda look like? So the agenda is supported by two goals. The first one is to leverage high-quality electronic health data for research, and the second is to advance a health IT infrastructure to support research. And within each goal is a set of priorities, and those priorities include one or more supporting strategies or tactics, which then identifies a specific need that currently exists within the research ecosystem. And each action underneath these priorities is broken into something, again, so hence the name of policy or development agenda, something that's either a policy-oriented lever or development-focused lever. So policies could be anything from just additional collaboration across our stakeholders, or perhaps informing the utilization, such as NIH did with requesting more use of FHIR standards as a part of their processes, to more development work, which would be like a demonstration project or a pilot study that's looking at the actual development of a standard or the application of a tool or the development of a tool to support research. Some of our stakeholders across these obviously include our other federal colleagues, but also include research foundations, healthcare provider organizations, health IT developers, the IT sector at large, so thinking, you know, your Googles, your Amazons. Patient advocacy groups, obviously, as we want to be able to increase participant and their education and ability to participate in research. Payers, researchers, as well as funding entities that fund research, and especially standards development organizations, as well as any other relevant stakeholders. So it'll be key to identify the current work and the appropriate stakeholders to promote efficiency and avoid duplication of effort. So we've tried to do that across the policy and development agendas to ensure that we're aligning and coordinating with the right folks. So I'm going to take a deeper dive now into each of the priority areas and their supporting strategies. Next slide. So the first priority is to improve data quality at the point of capture. And this really gets at our research is only as good as the data that we have. And unfortunately, health data are not always captured in standard formats or with the corresponding metadata needed to ensure the integrity and fidelity of the data. Individual data points need to be captured seamlessly, completely, accurately, consistently, and in a standardized format to improve the use of electronic health data for research. And for use in research, data must be accurate and precise. Metadata are particularly important here. So the quality of the data must be balanced against the needs of users who generate the data, and strategies needed include coordination of a multi-stakeholder effort to identify high-priority metadata elements, the development of metadata standards, and the adoption and use of data and metadata standards. I would like to say that one of the important aspects, for instance, that ONC is doing is currently is working on this aspect right here, which is trying to identify emerging high-priority data standards and metadata standards that are needed for both research as well as care. Next slide. So priority area two is to increase data harmonization to enable research uses. Common data models allow for analysis of differing data sets by converting them into a common format, yet harmonizing these models remain a challenge. And so for health data to be used efficiently for research, they must be extracted and aggregated in a seamless manner that allows for harmonization across different organizations and also to be available for reuse for future research inquiries in accordance with established privacy and security safeguards. Work across agencies that fund biomedical and health research, health services research need to create incentives for researchers to use and share common data models, as well as institute mechanisms to communicate updated information about new and emerging data models to study section reviewers and to researchers. One of the other tactics underneath this is to investigate funding a large scale, think of a national or centralized research workbench platform, which would allow researchers to share data elements, crowdsource and converge on data models, share tools for data extraction and cleaning, and a place to promote existing services or perhaps provide peer-to-peer support, an area to disseminate ideas related to analysis of methods and predictive models used to support research. A single common data model that maps clinical data elements across various EHR systems would be a large-scale project, but it's possible given the examples already developed and used in research settings. Again, thinking of such networks such as Sentinel, PCORnet, and others that have established common data model. Again, the challenge is that each model is developed for the fit and purpose of that organization or network's research needs, which can sometimes make interoperability a challenge. We see FHIR serving as an important avenue here. Next slide. The third priority, improve access to interoperable electronic health data. In addition to being captured in standard formats, data must be accessible through standardized extraction and transmission mechanisms available to all authorized users within the infrastructure. So this includes the availability of reference documentation to support the identification and extraction of the specific data needed to answer the research question. Experience with public will drive incremental improvement of API standards. And while this trend will enable data sharing for a variety of end users and purposes, documentation regarding the schema and technical specifications underlining the health IT systems may be needed for research, for researchers to understand, integrate, and analyze the data from these open APIs. So we are specifically calling out that specific requirements for certified systems to make sure that their technical specifications are publicly available so researchers can understand how the data points are represented. And also to encourage health IT developers to make available APIs and accompanying specifications and the design of their EHR systems to enable access by other systems. And then ultimately through a lot of pilot work, we can test the effectiveness of the schema publication and API expansion towards small and mid-sized health IT developers. Next slide. So moving into the fourth priority, improve services for efficient data storage and discovery. Research data are often inaccessible due to localized storage. Supporting standards that ensure data are both interoperable and identifiable will allow access to data in new ways, increasing the breadth of information available for research. In addition, centralized solutions to data storage may be needed to encourage those who have collected data for research purposes to maintain and make data available for future research. Next slide. Priority five, integrate emerging health and health-related data sources. Integrating data collected outside the care delivery process that may affect health outcomes such as social determinants of health, patient-generated health data, and environmental exposure is critical to improving clinical care and research. Work is needed to support receiving, processing, and integrating these external health-related data streams in the health IT systems in a standardized way as appropriate. And therefore, health IT systems should support an infrastructure and underlying standards that can integrate and link to these novel data elements. Next slide. Priority six, improve methods and tools to support data aggregation. Presently, many steps involved in aggregating data from multiple sources are often done manually by researchers, and this curation is not standardized or replicable at scale or across multiple institutions. Future areas to focus to achieve advanced aggregation functionality include patient matching, data use agreement management, data curation, and more convenient analytic methods and tools. Advanced data functions are needed to improve the ability to aggregate data across various sources in both the clinical and research ecosystems. And again, these include functions to effectively and efficiently support matching and linking data, honoring data use agreements, looking at identifying redundant data, and managing updates to the data and the metadata, and working with varying data formats. Next slide. Priority 7, develop tools and functions to support research. Current resources are not optimized to facilitate critical research activities. Advanced functions will support consent management of personal data for research and improve processes such as recruitment, enrollment, randomization, and data de-identification. Tools are needed to more efficiently search, index, and query systems to identify patient cohorts or extract data about research participants. Additional functionality could be developed to more efficiently randomize participants to treatment and control groups in a trial, and tools that support robust de-identification and the use of de-identified databases to increase confidence and security and manage risk are also needed. Next slide. Priority 8, leverage health IT systems to increase education and participation. Potential participants are not involved in research due to barriers such as lack of awareness of available studies, effort required to participate, or sometimes the lack of trust in the research community. Approaches that support better education, engagement, and participation about or in research are coming into use, but further work is needed to pursue infrastructure improvements enabling and incenting participation from a diverse patient population. Patients and their providers may lack clear incentives to participate in or encourage participation in research. So therefore, tools and interfaces embedded within the health IT system could be used to more effectively recruit and enroll participants by providing education materials regarding research participation and providing information back to those individuals who participate in research to ensure that we can increase their interaction and sustained engagement. The health IT infrastructure should reduce barriers to participating in research to ensure inclusion and representation of all populations. Next slide. So, priority 9, accelerate integration of knowledge at the point of care. Gaps between new knowledge and its integration at the point of care are widespread. The rate at which new knowledge is expected to be generated both by traditional research and new care delivery approaches such as precision medicine will continue to outpace its integration and use if infrastructure and capabilities are not harnessed properly. Ongoing digitization of evidence needs to be complemented by integration and implementation of this information back into clinical care, for instance, using clinical decision hooks or other API tools. Advanced methods and solutions are needed to support these findings within the health IT infrastructure. And as these systems improve, they can be used to accelerate the rigorous but lengthy process used to integrate evidence at the point of care. Teresa, I'll hand it back over to you.
Thank you, Kevin. And thank you for reviewing the priority and actions outlined in the agenda. Next slide, please. So essentially what we tried to articulate is that solutions are needed to enable the research community more quickly and efficiently benefit from the availability of electronic health data and to leverage the existing health IT infrastructure. Collaboration across public and private entities will be necessary to realize the vision we articulated in the agenda. The current pandemic has illustrated in real time some of the gaps and challenges that we identified in the agenda and our need for a highly adaptable, transparent, and scalable health IT infrastructure that has the ability to capture high-quality data and aggregate those data across multiple platforms, the goal being that data can be analyzed for quick insight and shared back with the broader community, including providers, researchers, as well as patients and their families. Next slide, please. So to be able to advance some of the agenda, I wanted to talk through briefly some of what ONC will be doing or continuing to do, and as well as our collaboration with our federal colleagues. We will continue to be focused on coordination, advancing standards and infrastructure work, and working to implement actions across several of the priority areas through programs and policies in collaboration with stakeholders as we've been doing all along. As Kevin noted, we've been collaborating with NIH's All of Us Research Program and standards development organizations to pilot and advance standards, standardized data sharing. I mentioned the Think for Genes project, for example, and that continues and has moved on to phase three. I've already mentioned the LEAP and Health IT program announcement and the current awardees. We're in our third round of funding for that funding opportunity, are furthering progress on some of the key actions under across several priorities in the agenda. We expect to continue standards development activities to address areas of high priority, not just for clinical care, but also for research, and we'll work collaboratively across the department in doing so. And some of that, something I wanted to highlight is that the priorities that we outlined here also align with some of the needs and infrastructure priorities across federal agencies, and some of that is illustrated in how the agenda supports two of the goals in the Federal Health IT Strategic Plan. And while we developed this with a primary focus on research, many of the priorities outlined in the agenda are relevant to other use cases, such as post-market surveillance, biosurveillance, and public health. Next slide. I did want to outline briefly how this aligned with some of the work that some of our other federal colleagues are doing. So in particular, for example, we were able to collaborate with the Food and Drug Administration, which, as some of you have heard, is undergoing an IT modernization effort. FDA is supported by significant IT infrastructure and receives and manages large quantities of data. And to be successful, they require access to efficient efficiently collecting high-quality data, which would be advanced by the priorities in the agenda. They will also require improved data storage services, which I know they're working on, and new tools for aggregation of data for research. And they are also looking to incorporate real-world data and real-world evidence into decision-making and develop novel IT tools for regulatory purposes. Similarly, we work very closely with the Veterans Health Administration, which is the largest integrated healthcare system in the U.S., and the VHA research enterprise is supported by four major lines of research, three of which depend heavily on clinical data to conduct studies, which is derived from over 20 years of nationwide electronic health data. They also have two major research initiatives that also depend on electronic health data, the VA Informatics and Computing Infrastructure, as well as the Million Veterans Program, which you may have heard of, that is part of the Precision Medicine Initiative. All of these initiatives are dependent not just on electronic health data, but robust infrastructure to be able to do analysis and also feed findings back into clinical care as appropriate. We've been working also very closely with the National Institutes of Health, and they have been focused most recently in data science and open science, and their researchers need access not just to high-quality electronic data to do their research, but also robust research data infrastructure and tools. They have been emphasizing the need for access to data that are fair, accessible, interoperable, and reusable, and standards are needed to be able to advance that goal. They've been funding the Science and Technology Research Infrastructure for Discovery, Experimentation, and Sustainability Initiative, or STRIDES Initiative, which is providing cloud storage and computing support for high-value data sets. They also last year published a notice encouraging researchers to use the same FHIR API that is in final ONC and CMS Cures Act regulations. And we've been working very closely with them to implement related activities. The All of Us Research Program will require ongoing advances in data aggregation and analysis. And NCI, for example, National Cancer Institute, also needs access to robust health data infrastructure to aggregate and harmonize health data. So with that, I think we wanted to leave some time for questions. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Teresa and Kevin. HITECH members, if you have a question, please raise the hand in the Adobe Connect tool, and I'll call on you in the order in which you raise your hands. So let's start with Arian Malik.
Thank you. Very good presentation. Maybe two questions. Number one is, I don't see anything here on the legal framework for research, and in particular, how to address more ubiquitous use of real-world evidence pulled from EHRs with the requirements for protection of human subjects and IRB approvals. If we're going to be using data more broadly, we may need to consider additional mechanisms to protect the rights of human subjects, particularly with regard to use of de-identified data or other kinds of research needs. So as a, you know, as a point in case, I've heard at least anecdotally, as we're looking at risk factors for COVID-19 and other kinds of real-world evidence related to COVID-19, that at least some of the issues regarding pooling data are caused by the need to get specific IRB approval for each of the research needs, as opposed to being able to pool data and do a variety of cohort analyses. Second question is, maybe I have too many. I'll just confine it to how do we address the 90-10 split with regard to clinical trials data? So in my experience, having previously done drug development and data management, there's a good chunk of the data that is common in between a variety of clinical trials. Things like lab data, demographics data, adverse event reporting data, and the like. And then a wider variation around very deep areas that are specific to therapeutic area, drug class, et cetera, that require data that may well not be in the EHR. So the data that's in the 90% is very likely in the EHR. The data in the 10% is very likely in case notes, unstructured data, other sources of data that might not be structured. So I wondered about the proposal for addressing some of the inherent variation in particularly outcomes data, endpoint data, and some aspects of disease-specific safety data that tend to have wide degrees of variation. Thank you.
Aaron, thank you for the questions. So in terms of some of the issues you addressed with regards to informed consent and IRB approval and data sharing, what I'll say is that we focused on advancing some of the infrastructure-ish functionality that would enable data sharing with attention to informed consent and with the necessary privacy and security provisions in place. So there's some recommendations and actions around codifying data use agreements and also developing out existing standards and things of that nature to be able to ensure that appropriate privacy and security protections are in place. Under the LEAP in Health IT funding opportunity, ONC made an award to focus on, for example, further developing out the FHIR consent resource, which will include consent for research. And some of that we're also advancing in collaboration with NIH, for example, which are very much focused on some of these issues. With regards to the fact that some data are fairly consistent across clinical trials and others are not and may not be in the EHR, again, we'll be collaborating with NIH and FDA on multiple fronts. As I said, we will continue to focus on advancing relevant standards, and we'll be working with our sister agencies to identify what are the high priority use cases, and we are looking to try to make sure that we identify needs that are relevant across use cases and programs and agencies to be able to work collaboratively. In addition, the agenda does speak to working to integrate relevant data from other sources and finding ways to do so effectively and efficiently without adding burden to healthcare providers in doing so. Kevin, I wasn't sure if there was anything you wanted to add.
No, thank you very much.
Hey, let's go to Ken Kawamoto.
Hey, thanks. So my question is, historically, the research communities had a data model or competing data models that are different from what's used in the clinical domain. Do you see any reason why, for example, with NIH recommending the convergence on FHIR and the fact that there is an established clinical domain approach to trying to gain consensus there, namely through the U.S. core data for interoperability, that the research data model issue cannot be solved by converging on a common U.S. CDI-based FHIR set of FHIR profiles that span both clinical and research?
Thank you, Ken. That's a very timely question, and it's something that we're working through collaboratively within NIH. I am currently on a temporary reassignment to NIH and have been working with Dr. Mark Donald, who I know is on the line, on coordinating FHIR activities pursuant to the notice that NIH issued last year. And this is something that has come up, and we are going to be exploring further whether there's an issue of better harmonizing those common data models with the FHIR or converging on FHIR as the data model to be used and ways to do so effectively and bringing the research community along with us.
That's great. And I would just try to keep it at the profile level also convergent, because there have been fits and starts in HL7 already of basically competing FHIR profiles, at which point, even though you can say everyone's using FHIR, they still don't talk with each other. So I would really encourage focusing on not creating a research-specific set of FHIR profiles that are similar but different from the clinical set of profiles.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Cheryl Turney.
Thank you so much, and I want to thank you for this presentation today. I think it's very important. You know, as folks on this group know, I am a huge supporter of research. My family has participated as a result of many different types of medical issues. One comment I wanted to add to what Arian said about the privacy is that is a little bit concerning, is that more and more de-identified data, you know, is really not de-identified. So are there any efforts that you are pursuing to ensure that patients are educated to know that there is a risk, however small it might be? I know there's been various reports that I have seen and read that have talked about even the state APCVs, which are the all-payer claims data. That data combined with a newspaper in many cases can actually re-identify individuals. When you look at things like accidents and births and, you know, certain situations like that. So, you know, in terms of aggregating data, I think there are, you know, valid concerns, especially in light of all the use of AI and other, you know, types of techniques that are being used to analyze the data. And of course, if everyone's interest was altruistic, that wouldn't be an issue, but we know that that's not the case. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, and what I will say is that I agree with you. I mean, it's an issue that has increased recognition. We have been working collaboratively with Sage BioNetworks for a few years, and what I will say is that I think the critical piece is to be very clear with individuals as they enroll to participate in research studies, and use the model that Sage has developed in terms of education and kind of teach-back methodology, to put it simply, to make sure that not only are they provided the information at a level that is understandable, but also you ensure that they ensure the risks and that you stay in clear contact and communication throughout the lifetime of a research study. I'll say that all of us is breaking new grounds on many different fronts. One of them being returning results back to participants and keeping them engaged throughout the lifetime of the study. So I think that may serve as a good model that others can emulate, and we'll have a lot of lessons learned in terms of how to best do this.
Teresa, this is Kevin. I would also add on the All of Us Research Program has also specifically, and for the last, you know, many several years, have had specific work groups targeted around certain, you know, groups of interest. So like pediatrics or certain focus groups, focal groups, so, you know, like tribes, Native Americans, et cetera, about, you know, what thinking through all the considerations when it comes to privacy and security, not just for everybody, but especially for certain individuals and sectors of the population.
Great, thanks. Let's go to Les Leonard.
Hi, I want to thank you for a brilliant presentation. I just really think you covered a lot of the key issues. Specific comments that I had were two. One, we always face a tension with privacy versus the quality of the data. As we move toward patient-controlled levels of disclosure of specific fields, we have to be, for data to be useful for research, we have to be able to mark that data as not missing but intentionally suppressed. Or some other approach like that, that if we're really going to allow patients to have control of their data at a field level, the standards need to reflect this notion of differences between missing and intentionally withheld. Second, I'd like to really call out the success of the All of Us project, and particularly the rise of patient-driven approaches to research through Sync for Science with that, and the role that personal health records can have in research, and that it'll be important for our standards to really facilitate this, that as patients can download their records through 21st Century Cures Act standards, that personal health record apps for studies. They can also upload them to scientific projects, and that we need to think through the patient-oriented approaches for research through personal health records.
Thank you, Les, for the comment. Just to add to your last comment first, We are the blog post that should be coming out next week is on Sync for Science and the work that we've done so far in collaboration with NIH. And I agree that we need to continue to develop patient-mediated or patient-controlled participation in research and other activities as a way of making sure that they're engaged and they're involved. And in the agenda, we prioritize or made recommendations around leveraging the infrastructure for continued patient engagement and research activities. That's your comment is right in line with one of our priorities. In terms of privacy and data sharing and some of the issues you bring up, it's something that's been mentioned previously and certainly something we can look to in terms of what the standards can support. I think there's also possibly an entire research agenda around, you know, what happens if people start sharing part of their record and not other parts and what's usable and useful for a particular for research study. So, yes, thank you for that.
Do we have other questions from the HITECH members? If so, please raise your hand on the Adobe tool or let me know verbally if you're just on the phone. Okay, it looks like we don't have any further questions. We'll now move to the next presentation, which is an update from the Intersection of Clinical and Administrative Data Task Force. I'll turn the mic over to Cheryl Turney and Alex Goss.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I appreciate it. Can we go to the next slide? Great. So today we're going to talk to you a little bit about the Intersection of Clinical and Administrative Data Task Force. We're going to just go over our progress to date and next steps and hopefully have a fruitful discussion Can we go to the next slide? This is the membership of our task force. I'm not going to read everybody's name out, but I wanted to say thank you so much for all of the people who are participating. Our membership has changed a little bit from the beginning, and those updates are made here. We also have a number of industry experts who have come to participate who are not regular task force members. And so the meetings have been extremely enriched through their efforts. I think we can go to the next slide. I wanted to remind the group as we get started today what our charge was for the intersection of clinical administrative task force, and was to design and conduct research on emerging industry innovations to validate and extend the landscape analysis and opportunities, invite industry to present both established and emerging end-to-end solutions for accomplishing medical and pharmacy prior authorizations that support effective care delivery, reduce burden and promote efficiencies, and then identify patient and process-focused solutions that remove roadblocks to efficient medical and pharmacy electronic prior authorizations and promote clinical and administrative data and standards convergence. We want to produce recommendations and related roadmap considerations for submission to HITECH and their action, and these deliverables will be shared with NCVHS to help inform its convergence and prior authorization activities, and also to make a public summary of our findings, hopefully no later than September of 2020. We established a vision for this overarching charge, and that was to support the convergence of clinical administrative data to improve data interoperability, to support clinical care, reduce burden, and improve efficiency, a further implementation of record once and reuse. And that's really the vision that we are trying to develop. In fact, the work group has begun working on an ideal state, if you will, to see how we might reimagine the work and not be necessarily constrained by the existing EMR systems that everybody is currently using, and trying to take it up another level, if you will. We can go to the next slide. So in essence, the scope and approach that we utilized was we created a compendium of the industry artifacts and the other federal work products and source documents that had been created and presented, and we utilized all the assets that had been brought to HITECH and ONC throughout the last year, and also materials that various industry groups like WEDI and the Da Vinci Project, HL7, Karen, all of those groups that have been participating. And there's many, I'm not listing them all, so I don't want to leave anyone out, but essentially there's many assets that we have created into this compendium as a resource for the work group participants. And then we tried to focus a small group to really give the group something to start with, and created a basic clinical workflow. That quickly became drilled down as we were discussing it based on different individuals and their EMR systems. And we really didn't want to focus on the EMR process as much as the process for, burden, and really take it out of one single type of system and try to look at it in more of a model way, if you will. So what we did is we pivoted a little bit, and we started working on a workbook that tried to bring it up a level to data classes and actors and some of the considerations and guiding principles that we have in order to scope out what our final paper would include. The ICAD work group then transformed that workflow, if you will, like into that workbook. We looked at these efforts and we tried to define some connection to the work that HITECH had been reviewing over the last year. So one of the things we wanted to make sure of is that all of the groups that have come and spoken and presented materials to HITECH would be considered. So between the compendium and also the work that we're putting in the background in our workbook, we made sure that all of the considerations and recommendations that had been made by third parties to HITECH were incorporated into the work that we are processing, so that we're, you know, not basically leaving any group or a third party that has an interest in our work out. We can go to the next slide. So in terms of our progress to date, just to remind this group, we do meet weekly on Tuesdays from 3 to 4:30 Eastern. Always welcome to have you join us in addition to the work group that we have. Subgroups do meet throughout the week, and we have two or three of those going. As I mentioned, one is focusing on the ideal state and guiding principles. We have another one that's been focusing on data classes, and we soon will hope to be pivoting to what the goals for our paper would be and our priorities, as well as what our recommendations will look like. We've had demonstrations by third parties. SureScript from CoverMyMeds came on March 28th, and then we had Regents or Cambia and Humana come and make presentations on May 5th. And then this week we had a great discussion that was led by American Medical Association. And there may be additional presentations made in the future. We had one more planned that was postponed, but we'll have to see how that goes. And now Alex is going to take you through our next steps. Alex?
Thank you, Cheryl. Hopefully you can all hear me. I appreciate you setting us up with sort of the foundation of what the task force is about and the substantial progress that we've been making as we've been creating a framework of thinking that will lead us towards our work product of a report. So I'm going to talk on this slide about the next steps, and then we'd like to have some discussion time with the committee. We've got queued up on the next slide. So from the next steps specifically, we're going to continue with the framework of our weekly meetings, which are scheduled through September. We are going to continue to have workbook elaboration, meaning our small work groups that are focused on the data classes, guiding principles, and the ideal state will continue to elaborate their work. And from a guiding principles and ideal state perspective, we've identified the opportunity to take a deeper dive with the privacy and security aspects. So we'll be working on that small working group deep dive over the next couple of weeks. The result of those small working groups, as Cheryl noted, will really help us create the framework or the fodder that will enable us to define the recommendations that we need to craft for the full HITECH review. As a part of the recommendations work that we're doing, at least I know from the Guiding Principles and Ideal State Work Group, we've already taken a look at the third-party recommendations to HITECH and are factoring that into the foundational effort. So we'll round that out with our subsequent small working group efforts. One of the challenges in front of us is to take the very focused conversation around prior authorization and extend that or extrapolate it to the larger intersection of clinical and administrative data. This is going to provide us with a really important step that gives us the opportunity to provide different types of recommendations to HITECH. Prior authorization specific, and the larger framework aspects of our ecosystem needing to converge clinical and administrative data types, standard frameworks, and policy adoption. We seek to produce our draft recommendations mid-summer, and with final ones targeted by September, but I believe we'll have sort of touch points along the way. So this gives us a nice framework for the work that we need to complete over the next 2 months to achieve that September goal. I'd like to move to the next slide, please. As an opportunity to give you an update, we wanted to leverage it to solicit some input and have some dialogue with you that will help advance our task force efforts. So we created a framework of four questions that we'd like to throw out there today to start some discussion in addition to other questions that may have been generated from the update that we've delivered. So we are looking to get some feedback generally on the broader intersection of clinical and administrative data. We've been thinking a lot about prior auth, and so we'd appreciate input from you on goal areas that we should be covering and questions we should be answering in regards to the broader convergence conversation. We've had several areas that have been bubbling up as repeating themes within the task force, such as coordination of benefit complexities with prior authorization, goals related to cost transparency for patients at point of care related to prior auth, the lack of attachment requirements, and what that means in the role not only of prior auth, but in other functions within the information exchange between payers and providers, and also some considerations about what should be the timeliness levels that we're all achieving when we request a prior authorization and we get receive a response or appended response. So we'd appreciate hearing from you today on any key considerations related to those or other topics you may have similar to that list I just covered. Third, we've been thinking about the aspects of piloting and how that might reveal opportunities and barriers within the EMR systems. This really helps to get at the workflow dynamics that are at the crux of data capture and transparency and keeping the whole care team, patient, and their team engaged as we move forward with trying to improve prior authorization specifically. So we're interested in any piloting activities that we might be able to help us get at the crux of those barriers and challenges. From the fourth question, looking to see if there's any way to standardize the data requirements across payers, which clinical decisions are based upon, even if the prior authorization type decisions differ by payer, plan, and product. And as we noted, the US CDI has been a part of our thinking in regards to the data classes, and so we'd like to open up some discussion around how US CDI fits into the model. This is some just general questions to get us started, but I think at this point we probably want to open it up, Lauren, for questions from the committee.
Great, thank you. HITECH members, if you could signify that you have questions by raising your hand in Adobe, that would be great. And we'll start with Ken Kawamoto.
Great. Thank you for this this work. I was hoping that as you use administrative data or go into it, that you could advocate for the claims data to be available through US CDI and that process. Perhaps you could comment. I'm thinking in particular, for example, there's good in, when it comes to procedures that are done, in our health systems, there's great, oftentimes great CPT coding that's available, but oftentimes the actual procedures through the procedure interfaces that are available don't have any standardized coding associated with them. And I think it could help for other purposes like, you know, making sure that users are aware that this exam has already been done and therefore let's not do it again because there's a good chance it's just going to be duplicative and waste resources. And so I just wanted to ask about whether you've considered just getting claims data through this effort included through US CDI.
I think that's a really great question. Sorry, Cheryl. I think this is a great launch off point for us to take back into the broader conversation. We've been very focused on prior authorization, and I think the idea of claims data is a far bigger scope of consideration, which gets us to the next phase of our work with broader considerations. So I really think it's a great idea for us to put that on the table. Cheryl?
Yeah, I absolutely agree that that's a great point of discussion. And, you know, obviously there are systems where payers exchange data with EMRs today, but what we've been told is most of that claims data then gets put into a separate database. It's not available through the EMR. So you're really looking at how can we make that data available through the EMR, and I think that is a really valid point we need to talk about. So thank you for that.
Thanks.
Thanks. And let's go to Clem McDonald.
So this question isn't narrowly targeted at this group, and I couldn't ask it the last one because I didn't get connected with Liz. But for many things with prior authorization, we'd like to know the values of tests and results. And in that case, you'd probably like to get at some of the standard codes that aren't claims codes, but medical record codes, like Link and Rx Norm. And in that context, what I found in general, a lot of the systems by OncRules are able to deliver the test results to the outside through a messaging system with the appropriate codes. But people inside the institutions have a heck of a time finding them because almost never, at least in large systems, are they actually stored with, the test results. There's some mapping table somewhere. And I don't know if it's the same with the drug data, but it's a problem, especially for researchers within an organization trying to find this stuff. So it might be worth thinking in some future world of requiring that the codes, the primary codes from USCDI be stored in the record with the specific test result or drug prescription or whatever or the condition. So if you got a condition record, it would carry the SNOMED codes. Now, I don't know if all of them suffer the same problem, but I do know it's a big problem with Link and lab testing, that this is really not to your committee specifically, but you probably would like to get at this stuff too, going the other direction from what the King Cloud Telemoto suggested.
So just so I'm clear on what you're recommending, so what you're recommending, Clem, is that the test results and those indicators and codes be stored with the test results.
Yeah, I think it generalizes to the other cases, but I don't know if they are not already there. So you got a prescription record.
Okay.
The standard code should be stored as a primary field in the prescription record. And if you got a test result, the standard code should be stored in the, because the truth is the researchers are having a heck of a time finding these codes in the systems, which are quite complex systems. They are probably there somewhere, but they're in some mapping table somewhere.
Okay, I think that's, I think I understand.
Thank you.
Thanks. And let's now go to Christina Caraballo.
Hi, thanks. Thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to chime in on how this would fit into the USCDI model. I think that when we are looking at USCDI, we need to make it kind of fundamental in how we're looking at any type of data element that we're trying to get to USCDI. We've really defined a process, and when we're going through anything that we're evaluating, I think we should look at the criteria that ONC has put into place with feedback from both our committee and the industry. I think it's important that as a first step upon readiness, we do submit the data through the submission form that is hopefully going to be launched soon and continue to monitor the process from submission to level one to level two to USCDI. When I think about the promotion model that we have put into place collectively, we really thought through industry readiness and a need and have started to define that criteria to move through the process. And it gives really good kind of boxes to check to help get data elements and data classes through the process in general. So I think just using that as a template will help us kind of guide our work and enable us to better position the
new things that we're working on for ONC, not only to evaluate for USCDI, but also just for the industry to better understand if things are ready for national adoption, even if they aren't put into USCDI at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. USCDI is foundational to our thinking and leveraging the work that the other committees have done. So we want to build upon those earlier recommendations and have early on in the small working group, and Cheryl, you may want to speak to this as you've been more intimately involved with that small working group. They've really worked to harmonize the way we're thinking about data flow, data classes, data elements, all within the context of the USCDI work.
And Christine, I understand what you're asking for as well, because having been on that USCDI working group, I do think that there was adopted a great maturity process. And I think that, up to now, always, for, various reasons, claims data has always been kept separate of the clinical data, and it's our opportunity to bring those together through this effort. And I think that, claims data often is already set up in a good way, because it is already exchanged electronically. So although not all of the data may be present in an EMR system, and that aspect of it would need to be handled, the data as it comes to a payer through an electronic transaction in most cases and then is returned, obviously is probably more ready for consideration in the USCDI model than some of the other aspects. But how that data needs to be used and the piloting of those opportunities to bring that data together are some of the ways that can demonstrate the value of bringing that data together. And I think there's some Da Vinci pilots going on right now that demonstrate the collaboration between providers and payers in terms of reducing gaps in care and things like that, where having the claims and the clinical data brought together are, definitely making a difference. So, I appreciate that recommendation. I think it's a good one.
Thanks. Let's now go to Ken Kawamoto.
Thanks. Question is around your thinking on the frameworks for doing prior auth versus standardizing on the discrete data level requirements. And this comes from just my review in particular of Da Vinci in HL7, where I think in reviewing those kind of standards, the overall interaction frameworks and the use of CDS-SOCs, use of FHIR, et cetera, they all look quite good. The place where I think it starts falling apart is that, like many projects, it doesn't really deal with the granular data that needs to be exchanged. So maybe as some examples. So for example, let's say, to check on certain prescriptions, you need to know what the patient's LDL cholesterol level is. There still needs to be a process to say, well, if there is a cholesterol level, what's the process that ensures that that's actually going to be mapped to LOINC? So that's sort of a prototypical example of something where it seems like the standards have already been existing to fix it, but in reality, a lot of that data might not actually be available in standard form. And more complex might be something like, let's say, trying to prescribe home oxygen, and you need to know what the patient's oxygen saturation is, both on room air and on whatever liters of oxygen. And most current systems may only just give you the oxygen saturation from the pulse ox without actually telling you whether this was on room air or was on 2 liters of oxygen, et cetera. And similar kind of thing, let's say, for lung cancer screening, where CMS requires that report the patient's number of pack years that they've smoked, and that might be in the EHR, but there's no actual interface to pull that data. So I guess my question really is around, what's your thinking on how you're going to deal with that issue of, even if the framework is available, in the end, you need that discrete data level standard, that data in standard form, whether it requires mapping or requires data that's currently not being pulled at all to be pulled. What's your thinking on that?
So Ken, let me just make sure I got your question right. So really what you're talking
yeah.
about is it's one thing to have a framework. It's another thing to be able to know that there's discrete data that is available, that the intersection with the policies of the payers can be pulled back into the PA process, and whether that data is actually within the EMR or an ancillary application, so that we make sure that we have the right specific element needed for whatever medical necessity determination is being performed.
Yeah, that's right. So if you take like the home oxygen requirement, it's one thing to say, hey, I can detect that you're about to place a home oxygen order, and that's sort of a separate issue where those orders themselves need to be standard encoded, where oftentimes it's not. But let's say you detect that you are actually trying to place a home oxygen order, then I think with a lot of these models, the payer would say, well, here's the information I need. If we're going to stop simply at, well, now you have to fill out, you know, does the patients have an oxygen saturation less than 88% when they're, you know, on room air, and you expect the user to just, you know, look it up and fill it out, that's one thing. But I think a lot of these are expecting that if the data exists in the system, it will pull it back. You run into issues there, for example, where I don't think any of the EHR systems right now append the liters of oxygen that the patient is on to oxygen saturation when they return it. So those are the kind of things where what I would imagine you would need to do is to say, well, we're going to push this through the USCDI process to expand the vital signs component of the US core USCDI data elements to say we are going to also have this standard way where the whether the patient is on room air or on however many liters of oxygen when this oxygen saturation was measured will be part of what gets transmitted. Because then you could answer that question. Without it, either you would be filling it out with incorrect information or you would be asking the user to go ahead and do it themselves.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was thinking about your request, and it's really about, it really presents an interesting dynamic on top of the workflow considerations that we've already been discussing in that, you know, there's the data capture dynamics that happen with, did it actually get, can it be, is it during the interaction between the patient and the provider captured and then put into the EHR? And then there's the second aspect, which relates to the sort of use case related to burden reduction, where we say, hey, payer, I want to do a prior authorization for Suzy Q, and we go through this coverage requirements discovery, the document templates, and then the prior authorization. So we've been thinking about the ability for how do you use the 278 type prior authorization transaction scope of content, but to be able to look at API sort of interfaces that can leverage the content out of the EHRs to get us more automation, reducing human intervention. But when you couple the frameworks of those use cases in FHIR along with the way the data is captured, I think you've identified a big, a longstanding challenge that we're going to have, which is stuff is always going to be either discovered as needed, a new data element that might be needed, and how do we make sure that that data element is not only supported in the foundational standards, but how does that then traverse all the way from that point all the, you know, into the USCDI frameworks and the EMR solutions that are certified? So it's a complex issue, and I think I'm glad you brought it up. I think it's something we're going to have to tackle. Those are my initial thoughts. Cheryl, do you have some other thoughts on that?
I agree with you, and I think that this is why we're looking at you know, different subjects, like what are the data requirements for different types of prior authorizations, and is that data even available in the EMR, which is the point that you're trying to make. So, and it is likely that there are going to be different types of prior auths that, you know, every payer looks for, but that data, as you point out, may be available in some EMRs and maybe not in others. And so what would our recommendations be in those cases? And I think that, you know, this is a big problem. This isn't a small one, but maybe the right solution here is to have a framework put in place so that, like the USCDI and the maturity of that framework, this framework can be matured over time as well, tackling one, you know, data group at a time, and if you will, for, you know, prior authorization. And if, you know, the oxygen requests are one and, you know, we need something else and somebody else was, you know, bringing up something for, you know, medical devices, you know, there are going to be specific data needs for each of these, and all of the data may not be in the EMR that needs to be transmitted and then that needs to come back. And so to me, by looking at it as an ideal state, I want to pretend that, you know, at the end of the day, if this was an integrated system that we could revisit, what is it that we would want to have happen? And then how do we try to make that happen over this cross-section of vendor tools, both at the payer side and at the provider side, because we have to deal with both, and then the communications back and forth. I think that, you know, what HL7 is doing and other aspects, Weedy and Karen, they're all focusing on the transmission of that data. And what we need to focus on is not only that, but also the receipt and the storage and the use of that data. Because as I said before, having claims data available in some system off to the side that's not connected to a patient isn't going to be helpful when you're looking for those procedure codes related to that patient. So we need to somehow have recommendations that allow the integration, and that is not going to happen overnight. So some framework to allow that interaction to occur over time through a maturity process, I think, is what we're, you know, most likely going to try to focus on.
I think there's also a tie in there with that maturity framework idea, Cheryl, that ties to some of the payer related processes we've been discussing in trying to make sure that the prior authorization requirements are periodically reviewed, refreshed, and that over time that what we need prior authorizations on will change, and we need to have a method for that. But we also need to have a tie-in related to evidence-based medicine, and that all starts to then get back to the discrete data captures and back to your point about the storage access and use downstream within the USCDI and the products. So it's a very multifaceted item that you bring up, Ken.
Yeah, and I would just note that this particular issue is in almost every project like this I've ever been encountered, identified as a challenging issue, and the can is kicked. And I brought this up specifically with DaVinci as a comment in the balloting stage, and they kicked the can on this one as well, is at least at that point. What I would just, and I think I understand why, because trying to solve it completely is completely daunting. At the same time, I think if we don't have this, you'll just end up having forms that get presented to clinicians that they have to just fill it out, a bunch of it by hand, wondering why, if it's in the EHR, and I know it's in the EHR, do I have to re-enter this, which I think sort of defeats the purpose of the burden reduction to a great extent. So I would just encourage that it be kept in scope, acknowledging that this project is not going to solve the entire process. But like you said, you could identify approaches with specific examples and say, when, you know, the next thing comes up, and it inevitably will, and there will be a lot of them, this is the process that it shall go through in the future.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I do think that this is an item that there needs to be some recommendations related to how to provide more than just a data exchange, but also maybe there's an opportunity, and I've mentioned this before, where the MR systems need to open up certain aspects that provide more open source type solutions that allow for the integration of payer and provider data more greatly. And maybe that needs to be in some cloud space somewhere or whatever in order to provide a solution. But at the end of the day, there's going to be probably a lot of these hooks that need to be integrated. And the only way to solve them would be to start piloting something. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we can come out of this group with some recommendations for pilots, and this might be a great one to start with.
Great, thank you. Let's go to John Kansky now.
Thank you. I had a comment related to the observation of the need to combine clinical and claims data together. And I just, for awareness of the task force, I wanted to make sure you are aware that an increasing number of state-based and community-based health information exchanges have participation from both payers and providers, which manifests itself in a couple of different ways. One is that there's, in some cases, both clinical data and claims data that's matched around patients and populations that can be used for various constructive purposes. For example, the consideration of whether health information exchanges can serve as a source to help with completing or providing prior authorization data, as an example. The bad news, obviously, is that that this situation exists in a minority of states and regions, but I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you. It is a good assessment perspective from Health Information Exchange, which I used to lead the Pennsylvania statewide health information exchange network. So I appreciate the variability aspects. It is wide.
Great, thanks. Let's go to Arian Malik.
Hey, thank you. And I just wanted to respond to Ken's comment, which I completely agree with. You know, I do think it's important to recognize that the current state is paper, fax, portal, you know, heavily inconvenienced, an unacceptable state. So advancing the current state, even if we don't get to full automation with all discrete information, is beneficial. But we need a model that lets us get towards a fully real-time system. And I think some of the work that we've been doing in terms of articulating the happy path and the end state while being pragmatic about how we model through it does get us there. And it will likely require a multi-phase step where the first step is, hey, we see that you're doing a home oxygen order, and again, really appropriate comments on the need to be able to identify that we're doing a home oxygen order, and a mix of discrete data and data that exists through attachment or data collection towards a need where some of that data is actually captured upstream source in the EHR. And I guess the last thing is just an observation that there is administrative complexity to and clinician complexity to collect the data upstream in the EHR, and so it's, and sometimes it may be better to burden clinicians at the time of PA than at the time of data entry. So maybe the room O2 saturation, the room air O2 saturation. Is a bad example. You might be able to get some good decision support or be able to automate some of that directly off of the instruments in the hospital. But if we're asking every clinician to enter the O2 mix at every time at collecting O2 saturation, you can actually drive burden upstream, and it may be actually better to concentrate some of that burden at the time of the PA. So, again, really good comments, just articulating the need for a progressive and incremental approach reducing administrative complexity and noting that sometimes pushing administrative complexity upstream actually increases data entry burdens for clinicians. So we need to be mindful of both ends of that. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Arian. Are there any other questions from HITECH members who are on the Adobe Connect? If so, please raise your hand. And are there any questions from HITECH members who are on the phone?
This is Clem. I just have, if I may, a comment, a follow-up on Ken's question.
Go ahead, Clem.
So I think he's absolutely right. And an oxygen measure has no meaning if you don't know how much oxygen they're on, although mostly they're not on any. And I think one fix for this would be the vital signs specification in, I think, both ONC and in FHIR doesn't include that. It should. And maybe, I don't know if I'm wrong, but I think that would be an easy fix.
Okay. Then that we have no more questions from any of the HITECH members. I will say thanks to Cheryl and Alex for coming and presenting to us today and holding this discussion. I believe Robert wanted to circle back discussion about earlier, so I will pass the mic to Robert.
Thanks, Carolyn, and thanks to Cheryl and Alex. And also note that it's great having Alex here on our task force. I guess it's a joint task force, and she's from the NCVHS, and as we talked about earlier on, we're always looking for ways which our two federal advisory committees, the NCVHS and the HITECH, can work together. And I think coming together on this issue of prior authorization is a perfect example of this. So anyway, I did want to say that we appreciated Elise giving us an update on where ONC policy is right now, and particularly see if we had any further comments from the HITECH about her presentation on where some of the policy is, and specifically any follow-up from our COVID-19 hearing or other discussions that we had. So I wanted to make sure that the committee had a chance to bring that up again. So. Just want to ask the HITECH, I know it's sort of out of sequence now because Elise's presentation was at the beginning of this, but if there are any other comments that you have about the COVID-19 follow-up or other policy issues that Elise had in her presentation, I thought this would be appropriate to have an opportunity for the committee to discuss that. And we also want to make sure anybody who's on the phone that is not on the Adobe application that can't raise their hand also has a chance to participate at this point. Okay. And I guess I also wanted to give Elise a chance to add anything else that she didn't have time for in her presentation because we sort of had to limit her comments as well.
Sure. No, I think I covered most of the items. I just want to make sure folks have the latest information on where they can find some resources regarding some of the different initiatives that we're doing. Definitely would encourage folks to sign up for the listserv as well, because that gives you a great look at the current things that are coming through as they're coming through, such as the blogs, the updates to the inquiry portal, et cetera.
All right. Great. All right, well, if there aren't any other comments or questions from the committee, I think we'll proceed a little bit early to the public comment period, and I'll turn that back over to Lauren for that.
Great, thanks so much, Robert. We do have the phone number pulled up on the screen here for the public members who would like to provide a comment. Operator, can you open the public line?
Yes, if you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. If you would like to remove your comment from the queue, please press star 2. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. We will pause for a brief moment to poll for comments. Our first comment is from Lauren Ripplinger with AHIMA. Please proceed.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Lauren Ripplinger. I'm the Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs for the American Health Information Management Association. AHIMA represents health information professionals that work with health data for more than a billion patients a year. And we recently brought together a group of our members that are really actively focused on this important topic of integrating clinical and administrative data. And the committee and the task force's really current focus on prior authorization is incredibly important, but we believe that it's just as important to focus on additional administrative processes that require data exchange between clinicians and payers, such as inpatient authorization and medical necessity reviews. Some kind of key areas of interest that we've acquired from our members include the need to improve processes for both patients and clinicians, thereby removing barriers and delays to care for patients, as well as obviously reducing administrative burden for clinicians. We're also very focused on addressing factors beyond automation, including more standardization of business processes and other factors that will help facilitate trust between clinicians and payers. It's also important to consider on-the-ground operations, including how information flows throughout the healthcare system, and really the crucial role health information professionals play in translating that clinical information for administrative purposes, including obviously the revenue cycle. Another key area of interest we believe is important is addressing the coding accuracy and ensuring there's really a clear understanding of how those code sets are used for both clinical and administrative purposes. And of course, the need to prioritize privacy and security, including assurances that only the minimum necessary information is shared and used for the specific transaction in question. We just really want to thank the committee and the task force for their work on this important topic thus far, and of course, welcome the opportunity to serve as a resource for the committee and the task force going forward. So thank you for the opportunity to allow me to comment this morning.
Thank you. And operator, do we have any additional comments?
There are no more comments at this time.
Okay, then I will turn it back over to Robert and Carolyn for any closing remarks.
Thanks, Lauren. I just wanted to share my appreciation with our presenters today, Teresa and Kevin, and Cheryl and Alex, for making time in the midst of this very, very busy season. And to let you know, I'll be looking forward to next month's meeting in June, which we will also do again virtually. Go ahead, Robert.
Thanks, Carolyn. And again, we're very appreciative of everyone committing your time and talent to this effort. These monthly meetings are very important, and I think we get a lot covered. I commend you to look at the summary graphics of all that we've accomplished as a committee. When you stand back from it, it's quite impressive. Also want to make sure that, as always, if you have comments or suggestions or ways to improve the process for this committee, please let Carolyn and I know, either through email or other means. We look forward to making this the best possible and effective committee for you. As was noted, we have our next meeting scheduled in June, and I'll turn it over to Lauren to give all the details of that and some of the other housekeeping issues. But look forward to seeing you all in a month. Thanks.
Thanks, Robert. Yes, so June 17th is our next virtual meeting. And as Alex and Cheryl mentioned, our ICAD task force meetings are weekly on Tuesday, so the next one coming up is on the 19th. I will, at this time, see if there are any other closing remarks from Dr. Rucker or Steve or Elise.
I just want to thank everybody for all of their comments and leave it at that and wish everybody safety and good health.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. And with that, we will adjourn. And we look forward to touching base again next month. Thank you all. Have a great day.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.